Hey guys, and welcome back to episode 225 of the OCDstories.com podcast. In this episode, I chat with Aaron Harvey. I interviewed Aaron a couple years ago about intrusivethoughts.org. That website has now merged to become madeofmillions.com, a much wider initiative covering all of mental health and not just OCD, although, as you'd expect, OCD is still a very big part of it because it's close to Aaron's heart. So we go into an update on his story, and if you want to listen to his full story, then check out that episode. I'll put a link in the show notes. But we get an update on his story. We cover what's new with Made in Millions. There are various campaigns, such as the No One Told Me campaign, which I think is a great initiative, and I hope it reaches many young people and older people who just haven't realized yet that what they're experiencing is OCD. And you can get involved, and he talks about how to get involved. And as always, it's just a great down-to-earth chat with Aaron. And without further ado, here he is. On the podcast today, I have Aaron Harvey. Aaron is the founder of madeofmillions.com, a not-for-profit that brings together sufferers, advocates, professionals on a mission to change how the world perceives mental health. Welcome back to the show, Aaron.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here, man. And for those that have listened to the podcast for a while, you were on this show about 2 years ago where you shared your story in detail. So I guess for those that haven't heard that or have, just a kind of recap of your story would be great.
Yeah, so, you know, high level. It's interesting, actually, as the longer I go and the more knowledge I get about OCD, the more, in hindsight, behaviors and experiences unveil themselves to me as actually having been OCD related. But yeah, high level, I don't know, maybe now as back as young as like 8 or 10, somewhere in that range. And I started to have a lot of thoughts that at that time were like sexual oriented, scrupulous, ticking the boxes on some HOCD, POCD, like whatever all these buzzy acronyms are. And it was very scary. You know, I kept that a secret for basically my entire life for like over 20 years. And they evolved in many different ways and always shocked me and always scared me. And they got increasingly violent over the years, self-harm, harming my partner, lots of murder, lots of gore. And then now I just kind of have like the mixed bag, you know, just like kind of one day could be, you know, raping a kid in the morning and murdering my girlfriend at night, you know, who knows, just whatever is going to happen. So, so that was that. And then, you know, my breaking point was turning to Google, which was a really scary thing to do, even though I work in advertising and help build the internet in one way or another. Never turn to Google because it's such a scary admission that something's wrong. And also like people are watching and Google is watching and, you know, all the paranoia factors. And that's when I found Rose's article, got plugged into the OCD world and realized what Pure was. And it was really transformative. It was life changing. I've still never been able to put into words what that feeling was like when you realize what you're going through, what you've dealt with for 20 years. I'd like to try to do that one day, but I don't know that I could ever honor what that feeling is with words.
Yeah. I think that's it's a powerful comment. I agree. I think for probably most people listening have had that kind of moment of whether it was a therapist telling them or it's something they found on Google or maybe a TV show, that moment of like I call it like a light bulb moment. It just clicks. That's it, you know?
It's shocking. I mean, to think that like in a flash, everything that you questioned about yourself and your character and everything was all potentially attributed to something else, you know? Yeah. And that immediate temporary relief, but then all of a sudden you're like, well, does this mean I'm more likely to do these things? Then you go down that K-hole. But yeah, so I mean that, you know, that experience for me was one, you know, in hindsight, it was just like growing up as, you know, a very privileged kid, middle, upper class, white American family, male parents in healthcare, suburban lifestyle. You know, I had so much in my favor that you would think that if anyone would have known, it would have been me. Like private school. If anyone would have known that this was a thing, it would have been me. And that's my big frustration and my inspiration, which is like, if people in privileged situations don't have any idea what is going on, and then what are we expecting for the majority and the rest of the world? So any way that I can use my platform as an entrepreneur and someone who understands the internet and how to do branding and campaigns and stuff, that's really the whole inspiration behind all the advocacy work, which has now been barely 4 years and has been a pretty wild ride. I've known for 6 years what OCD is, and I've been doing this for four, and I'm 39.
4 years, man. It feels like a lot longer than that.
It does, dude. It's crazy because, like, doing the first 2 years of what is this disorder, and trying everything. Like, I've tried over half a dozen different medications. I tried talk therapy. I tried ERP. I tried, like, all kinds of shit because I wanted to be an expert. I wanted to understand what all was available to me, how did I react to those things? Because I felt like there just wasn't a lot of curation in the world of, like, using lived experience to sort of understand the condition, the breadth, the scope, the available options, and what resonated for me, and then what resonates from other people as we hear from the community. So, you know, on the downside of all of this, I spent 2 years trying to get well. And then as soon as I felt okay, I immediately went into advocacy. And in some ways it's very healing and it's very positive. In other ways, it's just like, you're never turning this conversation off. Like, this conversation's always on. Like, there's no escape from it. It's just always present, you know?
Yeah.
And that's exhausting as well.
Yeah, I can relate to that. yeah, there are times when you're like, I don't want to say why did I get into it, but that, to be honest, it does come up. Like, you know, if I wasn't doing this, maybe I'd be more chilled out now or more relaxed. But in other ways, I know that if I hadn't gone into this, I'd be stressed in different ways. And this has become a creative, positive outlet or meaningful outlet for me, kind of as you said. But it's a tough one, yeah. Advocacy and anyone that becomes a therapist, you know, it could be tough doing that therapy work, but that's kind of part of the job, I guess. It's just,
yeah, and I guess you're even like doubling down, because not only are you lived experience plus advocating, now getting into therapy and treatment services, you're just like flooding yourself with nothing but OCD land.
Well, yeah, I mean, in therapy, you have kind of rigid boundaries, which help, of like, this is my therapy hour and anything else. Like, I was going to say, different therapists have different kind of rules around it and different styles of therapy. But at the minute, I'm not actually specifically working with people with OCD. So it's my therapy is actually my kind of break from OCD, because I'm working with people with other challenges.
Right.
Which in a way helps me come back into OCD with a new perspective to kind of look at OCD from.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I found all the concentration of this in this COVID and coronavirus land has been interesting, because the New York Times put out this article about OCD and how, you know, the pandemic is exacerbating OCD symptoms. Mm-hmm. And while it was accurate, it was only told through the lens of contamination OCD, and really did a disservice to everyone else's experience. Just a little bit more due diligence, a little more research, and that thing could have been really a great article. But also, I have a very counter perspective, because on one hand, while it may exacerbate symptomology of like contamination and just this general uncertainty that we all feel as OCD people, a lot of people who have had some basic experience with OCD or intense or training or treatment or anything, we're so used to uncertainty, and we're so used to dealing with constant fight or flight emergency state. And the stakes are so high to us, whether that's like, you know, being around our nephew or, you know, thinking we're a murderer, those stakes are real high. And with this global pandemic, despite being in New York City, despite being in an age range where I could have major health complications, despite having a business that is suffering and will suffer, a nonprofit that is struggling in with respect to the economic climate, I actually feel quite calm, you know? Mm. And I think a lot of people share that sentiment. It is scary. Not everyone feels that way, but a lot of people who've been through the ringer on OCD, I think, are so trained to deal with uncertainty that they just sort of accept the potential outcomes. You know, I might lose my business. I might get sick. The nonprofit might go away. This might happen. I'm just going to accept it, and I'm going to move on and go day to day. And I found that to be really beneficial.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, thank you for sharing, because I've heard that too. Many people that have just dealt with, who have had, say, OCD treatment, have just dealt with the coronavirus really well in terms of the uncertainty of it. Because like you said, most people with or without OCD who haven't done some kind of therapy or therapy that teaches around anxiety and uncertainty and all this stuff, you know, this big thing comes along that is scary, and they just don't have the tools to kind of deal with it. Whereas I think if you've gone through OCD treatment, you've kind of been given those tools. And I'm sure for some people they've gone through therapy and it's still kind of triggered it for them, and that's okay too. But yeah, I think the New York article obviously just didn't do that justice and said everyone with OCD is freaking out, which isn't the case.
Right. Yeah. And you know, if your basic needs are being met, I'm not in a position right now where my basic needs aren't being met. That would be a completely different situation. Yeah. But yeah, so it's crazy times, and all the more need for what you're doing in the world and what we're all trying to do as advocates.
Yeah, thanks, man. Okay, so you talked about you when you originally started an advocacy there, which was intrusivethoughts.org. Tell us about that and how it's transitioned, or you've weaved it into Made in Millions.
Yeah, so originally, it was coming up on almost 2 years of knowing what OCD was, and I was getting frustrated that I hadn't had the jumping off point, or I wasn't well enough, or didn't have the inspiration enough to build something for people to understand what it was. And I was like, January 1 of 2016, I was like, I'm making something by my 2 year anniversary. And the strategy for Intrusive Thoughts was, everyone seems to know what OCD is in their own way, right? Not that they understand. Most people don't understand what it actually is, right? Mm. I'm sure I made fun of OCD or joked about being clean and cleanly and orderly, while suffering in silence tremendously, because I just didn't understand what the disorder was. And so I didn't want to go and make an OCD website. I wanted to talk about a symptom that I felt everyone could relate to, which is like those WTF thoughts that pop in your head, and you're like, what is that? And because everyone can relate to that, that allowed us to build a resource that told a bit of a different story and then introduced people to the idea of what OCD actually is. So it was just a funnel, you know, a sort of a marketing funnel into, oh, okay, this is could be OCD. Let me go get a diagnosis. And so that's what that was. And, you know, it also allowed us to take that story of symptomology and go to Cosmo and talk about sex and intrusive thoughts, or go to Women's Health and talk about fitness, or go to Inc. or Fast Company and talk about being in a boardroom while juggling, you know, thoughts of, you know, slicing your client with a razor blade. Mm-hmm. So that allowed us to scale the story. But back then it was just a website. You know, my goal wasn't to launch a nonprofit personally. I originally was trying to contribute that website for free to another nonprofit. I just wanted to create things. I didn't want business or bureaucracy. I have enough of that in my day job. Yeah. But now with the transition, you know, over that time period, we realized that like all the people in the OCD space, like you, Chrissy, everybody, they're doing all this work because they're frustrated with the system, and they're frustrated with the lack of public health education and the lack of access to treatment and affordable care and everything else. And so, you know, when you take all that energy and you're like, you know, the change is not coming from these big nonprofits, the change is not coming from public policy or public health education, it's coming from this podcast and things like this. So that was really the inspiration for Made in Millions, which is like, if we want to see that change, it's literally coming from millions of people who've been affected by mental health. And I mean, people we hear from you know, Rwanda and Nigeria to Beijing, Paris, wherever, like people from all over the world are doing exactly what you and I are doing. And that's the real voice for change. And so we just wanted to sort of embody that idea and go beyond OCD, because if you just talk about OCD to other people with OCD, you can't challenge society's understanding of what OCD is. Mm-hmm. You can't introduce this idea to more people. And so that was it. It was like, we need to focus our entire mission on how can we change the way the world perceives mental health? How can we democratize access to education? How can we empower these DIY advocates like you and I? How can we create campaigns and tools and reading and materials and resources that help to combat cultural stigma? How can we go beyond this very white suburban OCD bubble that we're in and actually reach out to other communities who have lesser access to information? And so that's what we're trying to do with Made in Millions, and why, as an OCD sufferer committed to helping people with OCD, I think it's critical. You know, I need someone who comes to Made in Millions because they're depressed to realize that maybe those intrusive thoughts they're having are a symptom of something else.
Yeah, no, you're right, absolutely. And there's a million routes that someone could access Made in Millions, identifying with something else, and then, yeah, lead into actually, I'm feeling this because of actually this. This is what's coming up for me.
Yeah, and I think the comorbidity, or like the multiple disorder experience simultaneously, is just a huge component, right? Like, you know, scientifically, sure, maybe there's some studies that say that people with OCD or depression have both conditions have lower serotonin levels. And maybe there's some science behind that. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's environmental. Obviously, the jury's out on all that stuff. But what I could say for sure is that if you suffer in silence with debilitating thoughts about harming people and doing things that are totally against your character, you are absolutely going to become depressed, and you're going to question who you are. And and for us to not be talking about depression at the same time as talking about OCD, to not be talking about substance use and self-medication, it just exacerbates the problem. And it's critical for my POV that those different symptoms are discussed at the same time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a good point. And I definitely do my best to try and do that, although sometimes I get monofocused on OCD.
Yeah, but it's also important to have, you know, these specific OCD resources.
To go deep in the niche.
Yeah, you have to. That's super important. And I think with treatment too, what I see a lot is we sell the magic pill, which is ERP. Go get ERP, you'll be fine. And ERP is an amazing tool, and I use it in a way every day because as soon as I have some new weird obsession, I'm just like not going to play the game, and I'll just challenge it and challenge it and challenge it until I just don't deal with it anymore. Mm-hmm. And so that's an important tool, but it doesn't treat the whole patient. Yep. The whole patient has experienced a lot of trauma thinking every day. You know, one, just like trauma from seeing things all day visually is a terrifying experience. Trauma from feeling like you, or maybe even making a decision to leave your family or your job or like whatever else may be going on. Dogs. but this is going to be as
it's metaphorical for intrusive thoughts, isn't it?
Exactly.
All this background noise, and we're trying to focus on this.
Totally distracting, yeah. But yeah, so I mean, I don't know what I was rambling about, but I think it's just important that they're all part of the same storyline.
Yeah, like you were talking about the kind of trauma of OCD itself.
Yeah, and also like, you know, it's traumatic when if I'm in my my sister and my nephew's apartment, it's very traumatic for me if my nephew wants me to come into the bathroom while he's taking his bathtub and playing with his toys, right?
Yeah.
That's traumatic for me because I know what's going to happen. So I already have the fear walking in. I already know that I'm going to have thoughts about like disgusting things that I'm going to do to him or whatever. And in order for me to do that, I will flood my mind with way nastier shit, like immediately, just so, or standing in front of him, I'll just do it. And it can kind of calm me down. But like, that's really traumatic. Like no one wants to imagine raping their nephew. And it's really sick also. So to think that you can just sort of sell the idea of like, expose yourself gradually and then you can live a better life. Like you can, it's an important tool, but it's only one behavioral tool in the whole set. And you've got to be looking at treating the whole person and the depression and the trauma and the generalized anxiety. I highly doubt that anyone that has this heightened OCD anxiety is not anxious in social situations, doesn't have generalized anxiety in other ways, right? It's fucking anxiety. So like, that was kind of a very long-winded way of explaining why we're made of millions. You know, Intrusive Thoughts was never a brand, it was never an identity, it was just a website, and now this is something that I feel very attached to, like it feels like an identity, you know.
Yeah, no, thank you for explaining that, and funny enough, the at the time of us talking now, it hasn't gone live, but for everyone listening, if they go back one episode I did with Chrissy, was on the kind of traumatic impact that OCD can have on someone. So it's a great plug that you bring that up.
Nice.
But you, just for anyone that you know, because there were many, many people, and I've heard it many times, and rightly so, they really loved the website intrusivethoughts.org. That technically hasn't gone. So yeah, I just guess explain how they'll still get access to the content they would have seen originally.
Oh yeah. So that was obviously a concern. It was like, you know, there's some love out there, which is amazing. But what we did was we migrated all of that content in just under an OCD bucket. We added a bunch of more OCD content and we've built out a ton of live programming. So now if you come to the site, not only can you get all the same content, which most people find it through Googling keyword search, and we've been able to retain our position, so we'll still be able to grow people who are searching for their symptoms and be a soft landing for them. But now when you come, like, we've got people like Chrissy and OCD and like leading OCD psychologists and doctors, like building out live programming. You know, we've got a schedule. You can tune in. You can ask doctors questions. You can watch recaps. Like, So we're really pushing more towards not just live, but more like original programming series where we can tackle treatment, we can tackle X, we can tackle Y with different experts and make all those people available. And we can also do that alongside other conversations that are really important, like anxiety and depression, or things that are more related to lifestyle, like what about work? What about relationships? What about this? So there's so many crossovers that, you know, my hope is that people will continue to use, you know, Made of Millions as a reference point for general evergreen education on OCD. Yeah. But that's not something you should be reading over and over again, right? Yeah. The better thing would be to transition from reading that compulsively to actually engaging with the community, getting involved in some conversations, tuning into some YouTube lives, things like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. I love when I went on your website just before this podcast, just to refresh my mind. I love the live programming feature, and you've got it scheduled by time and date, which is awesome. You do, as you mentioned there, your background's in advertising, and it's great to see you using that skill set as part of advocacy. Like I always say to people, if you're getting into advocacy, try and find where your strengths are currently and bring them in, or what you enjoy as well. And so you did Dear Manager last year, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's where.
Which is awesome. We just found out that one's up for a Webby, which is awesome. And we've been invited to speak at cons. And, you know, it's been cool to see how in my world of advertising and media and marketing that some of the most awarded work is actually more of the nonprofit stuff. But yeah, so we launched that last year. And that was really, I think, again, like for the OCD community, it's such an important angle, because while we might be, well, on the surface, it might look like we're just generally talking about mental health awareness and culture and policy and education in the workplace. The reality of the situation is if I, when I was 16 working at like Blockbuster Videos or 18 at whatever, Chipotle or whatever it was, if I was sat down and provided training in the workplace that explained to me what obsessive compulsive behavior is, what depression and anxiety are, how do you seek treatment, what's the difference between a psychologist and a psychiatrist, if I was provided that, you know, that would have changed my entire, the course of my entire life in that moment. Yeah. And when we think about the workplace, we see it as the number one vehicle to transform society's understanding of mental health, because it allows us to create a vehicle to distribute information. And, you know, public policy, public health policy has completely failed. No one learns any of this information in school. No one is introduced to anything in America anyways. So as a result, you just get shuffled off into the workforce. And the employer is the only entity that has a financial interest in reducing disability claims and reducing, you know, the burden on healthcare and increasing employee productivity. And so the more that you can sort of tap into that, you know, later this year we'll be sharing some more on a new platform we're releasing. But what's very excited is that it will effectively have some mandatory training in large corporations, and OCD will be part of that. You know, intrusive thoughts will be part of that storyline, and that's what's so powerful is if you can take someone at Burger King who is behind the counter, behind the cash register, give them the same quality of education that the CEO gets, that's democratizing education access. And that's really the power of the workplace. And Dear Manager was sort of like our creative way to have an entry point to make some noise. And now we're really building on that with more productized solutions.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. It's been great to see it. And you created a pack as part of that, right? That companies can read and use and add ideas in it.
We've had like, you know, 4,000 or more downloads from the Goldman Sachs and the NBAs and the Michael Kors of the worlds. And it's been really awesome. And we've had global ad agencies totally transform their workplace mental health policy, introduce accommodations, do all kinds of stuff. So, you know, it's one little bit at a time, but we're making some impact in that environment.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I just wanted to highlight it in case there's any HR managers listening or anyone that wants to share it with their manager or their company. I'll try and dig out a link and put it in the show notes. So that brings me on to the next campaign, which is No One Told Me. What's that about and what can we expect to see?
Yeah, so this new campaign is very personal to me. I feel like the campaign video spot is exactly what I want to say to the world, and was something that just came together organically. We have built this amazing like early detection OCD resource. We wanted to tell this early detection story, and it was like a Saturday, and I was sitting on my couch like a few weekends ago, and I was like, God, this is so much shit. There's no way we can get this across the finish line and make this happen. I'm like, what is this whole thing about? Like, this whole thing is about this idea that like, no one told me some really basic information that if I knew when I was 10, 12, 13 years old, it would have changed the course of my life. And so the way we kind of see it right now is we have a public health crisis with mental health, exacerbated now by the pandemic and the current situation economically and health-wise. We have millions, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars pouring into healthcare treatment, healthcare innovation, mental health innovation. But it's all focused on treatment. And we have an average 10-year gap between when someone has experiences, first experience of a psychiatric disorder, depending on what study you read, there's many different variations out there. But let's just say up to a decade or longer for the average person to seek care. With OCD, we know it can be much longer as well. Yeah. I was way longer, double. So all this money is dumping into the profit center, which is treatment and care. And when you look at how a lot of the nonprofits are structured, that's how they're structured. The boards are all doctors. The entire focus of the content is not going into schools at age 12. It's not writing policy for a government to implement educational platforms. It's not building out robust and easy to access learning management solutions. It's, hey, here's how you get treatment. This is what it is. Now go get treatment and listen to our experts who are also profiting off your treatment. It's a little bit of a shitty way to look at it, and I will acknowledge that, but that is, it is one way to look at it. And our role is to raise awareness to the treatment gap with this campaign, which is, if you're an advocate sitting here, you've had an experience, what do you wish you knew when you first started experiencing symptoms? I wish when I was 10 or 12, someone said, hey, sometimes our brains kick off really like bizarre unwanted thoughts. And if you feel like they're bothering you, here's a path forward. If someone said that sentence to me, it would have changed the course of my life. And that's such an easy thing, right? So the whole point of this campaign is like asking advocates, you know, not to be salty about it, but to be, to tell that next generation right now who is 10, 12, who are right now experiencing those first thoughts and who are suicidal and are maybe self-harming and maybe trying to escape and sneaking drugs and alcohol and everything else in their house. Like, what should we be telling them? What did you want to know? You know, so we're exploring things like, you know, a woman who maybe has never, had never experienced any intrusive thoughts or symptoms of OCD, but when she's pregnant and has her child, she immediately has postpartum OCD and onset thoughts about harming her child, and that kills her, literally. So what did she want to know when she was pregnant? Like, no one told her when she was pregnant that you can have that, you know, and that's a normal thing. So it's really just trying to take something that was a negative experience for all of us and trying to put a positive spin on it, which is, what do we want that next generation to know? And it's just, you know, it's a small effort. It's a small attempt to try to raise awareness to the treatment gap and to try to be a voice for people who will suffer in silence for the next decade or longer, especially in marginalized and underprivileged communities. And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah. No, I love that. I think that's extremely powerful. And I'm sure many of us, if not all of us, could answer that question of what would I want someone to say to me? Or no one told me, or whatever it is. So yeah, I think it's going to resonate. So how is this going to be delivered, this campaign?
It's pretty simple. We're doing like a little motion spot. We're going to pump that out on social, see if there's some partners that want to put it out there. Where we got a, I posted on Instagram the other day, and I was like, anyone who wants to participate, pretty much anyone who hit me up, we're designing custom like treated, no one told me assets for them. And just using partners to get it out. I mean, we have zero budget and we're just trying to do what we do. You know, like last time we did Dear Manager, we printed like 10 big posters and like wheat pasted them in Manhattan and Brooklyn and photographed them and then like sent that over to Ad Age and we got the write up and it looked like this huge out of home campaign. So we just do little DIY hacks and we try to ask partners to share the information and put it out in the world. And you never know, man, maybe people will care, maybe they won't, but I care about it. And that's all I mean, that's not all I care about, but I care about the fact that it's personal to me and I want it in the world, whether it's successful or not, you know?
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And how can anyone listening, if they want to get involved, how can they participate?
So the most simple way would be just post a photo of you digitally when you first started experiencing symptoms. You probably look super cute at that time. Maybe it was older. Maybe you're still cute. And then just share like, you know, what you wish you knew at that time about your own mental health story or experience. You know, this is OCD, but it's broader, right? It can be anything, yeah. But it should be substantially mental, like mental health, not like wellness, right? Like I feel like Made in Millions is not your wellness platform. It is very much your sort of like truth for what's a symptom of a mental health condition. What's a stat or a fact, you know? Maybe you just wish you knew that one in four people, maybe it's that basic. Maybe you wish you knew that it could be a hereditary thing or genetic. Maybe you wish you knew it could be you know, that 4 in 5 or more everyone has intrusive thoughts, like that it's normal.
Yeah,
it's just very simple. Like, what's your sort of simple idea and what can you help share? Maybe you can tag 3 people into it and ask them what theirs is. But anything. And I think creativity is the key, right? The way I might express that could be very different from how another artist or a business person or a stay-at-home mom or anyone else might express that. So just like you said, with your own advocacy, just lean into what you love and make that whatever that is.
Yeah, no, thanks for sharing that. And I agree. That's why, you know, with the podcast, I ask the same questions sometimes. And the reason for that is everyone has different answers, and the way it's delivered will resonate with different people, whereas a week before, the same question wouldn't have hit those people. So it's important to, yeah, get different perspectives. And is there a hashtag to go along with this campaign that they can bolt on?
Yeah, just no one told me. Okay. Hashtag no one told me.
So yeah. Cool. Love it. Okay, thanks for that. I'm looking forward to sharing this episode and doing what I can to help. And hopefully we can reach some of those younger people. So, well, and I guess to caveat that, older people that still haven't realized or haven't been blessed with the information.
That, so I would actually say really quick, like one thing that I hope we're able to address, and we're working with Chris Baer at Unstuck, and Jen, this is my brave. We're trying to make sure that, like, you know, diverse as possible also means age, and it also means parents. Like, a lot of times parents feel guilt and shame that they didn't know what was going on, they didn't spot it, and they didn't help and intervene. So this isn't a my parents failed and they didn't tell me. This is a public health issue. This is a public health education crisis, and it has to start with education, because that will help to destigmatize the communities, especially where it's highly stigmatized. So parents, if you're out there and you've not experienced OCD, but your kids or your family members or your nephew or whoever else has, like, would love to have your involvement, and want to make sure it's very clear that, like, this is not a failure on a parental level. People just don't have the information. They don't know.
Exactly. Yeah, no, thank you for clarifying. Okay, so general question now around advocacy, because, you know, you've got 4 years solid in it now, which makes you a veteran. What would you have wanted to know when you started? Or what did no one tell you about advocacy?
Oh, about advocacy.
Yeah.
That it is a real uphill battle, that, like, just because you care doesn't mean other people will. And, like, I've really, really struggled with people taking us seriously, right? For four, I mean, obviously we've been building a business. We've been building our credibility. You know, we've added a medical advisory board. We've added advisors. Like, we've done all these things. We've checked boxes. And we've brought on brilliant people that can help us shape where this goes. Yeah. But it's really the bureaucracy involved in a lot of nonprofit organizations makes it very difficult to partner. And it makes it very difficult to do progressive things. And we have not had success in trying to do free work. I mean, free work. We've not had success in really partnering with the big guys. And I think it just sort of, maybe if I knew immediately that the game plan was like Stu's and Chrissy's and everybody else, and the game plan was not the big ones, I think that would have helped.
Yeah.
And I think it would have helped my psyche a little bit, because it's very difficult. If you're passionate, you're pouring all your time, all your energy, all your money into something, and then you're going and pitching it to someone and they're acting like they don't give a fuck. Like, that actually is really bad for your mental health. So I think, like, I think just the slog, the grind, I'm used to that. I've built business before. I would just, like, goodwill doesn't necessarily translate into progress. It's still a grind. It's still a hustle.
No, I think that's that. Yeah, and as you said, it very much depends on where your advocacy is focused. Because if you had stayed in the OCD community, it would have been easier for you, because people are interested, right? But as soon as you go to these corporations that may not have it on their radar yet or their agenda, yeah, it's then trying to convince them they need something, which at the minute they probably don't feel they need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, someone needs to be doing it, so I'm glad you're doing it.
trying anyways.
That's all that matters. Okay, so what have you learned in recent years, the last couple of years since we spoke about OCD? And it could be from your own point of view.
So many different things are like flooding in my brain right now in terms of what context. I think the main theme that's just been reinforced and something that I get excited about when I see other people talking about it is just the nonlinear aspect. Mm-hmm. You have, and I'm sure you've talked about this a lot, you know, but you have such a huge elation and relief when you figure out what's going on. You feel this total sense of direction and commitment to investing in how to get better. And then you get there and you realize that you really don't know even who you are. And I think that that's the really scary thing, you know, like, did you make decisions in your life as a result of your anxiety? And, did you make those by succumbing to OCD, or did you make those like autonomously? And I think for me, what's really difficult is looking back from being, say, 10 to 33 or whatever it was, and not really knowing what decisions were mine. And I'm in a major sort of, maybe it's a midlife crisis, but I'm in a major like sort of experimentation phase. Like, I want to know, I want to try things I never tried. I want to do things I never did. I want to experience ups and downs in different ways, because I'm just trying to learn, like, even who I am and what I'm about. And I don't know if my advocacy is just like some penance I'm paying for what a bad person I thought I was, or if it's just pure, like, unadulterated rage at the system that failed. Or a combination of all things, you know, I don't know. And I think, again, so many times we sell this like magic 1, 2, 3 step, and that's just not how it is. Mm. And any way that we can be not just the top of funnel, meaning like, we're a soft landing when you're sick, you don't know what's happening. We educate you, we push you out into the world to try to get you treatment.
Yeah.
There's that whole other piece, which is, how do you keep someone who's been through that on a steady path where they anticipate ups and downs? They know how to use tools out of their toolbox and navigate all those things.
Yeah. Yeah, I love
that. I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Yeah. No, it does, absolutely. Yeah, I love that. I think that's great. It's also about finding yourself. You know, I've heard many people say once they start to feel somewhat better from OCD, they're like, well, who am I? Or what am I going to do now that I'm not compulsing as much? Or all these different questions can come up. And especially when you can then look back on the past and start reflecting on that. But it's a journey, and, you know, you're discovering as you go. So, yeah. Okay, so what does Aaron do for fun?
Well, if I'm being honest, I probably work like, I don't know, 7 days a week, you know, a lot. Because I have my day job, and then the nonprofit takes forever is a lot. But my downtime, so I play guitar, I'm a musician. You know, music is just like my blood. I love so many different types of music. And other than that, just, you know, surfing. That's it, man. Yeah. Got a little spot down in Costa Rica, and like, all I want to do is surf, basically. Surf, play guitar, and work on advocacy stuff.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm sure surfing at the minute, if you're allowed to do it, would be awesome, because I'm sure no one's in the water.
Yeah.
Well, there's probably more sharks and stuff, but... because there's no boats. But what's your favorite song to play on the guitar?
Well, that changes a lot. I play a lot of different styles. Right now, I like playing an acoustic version of Sit Down, Stand Up by Radiohead. it's like an electronic song, but when you play it and like voice it on the guitar in a cool way, it's like so beautiful. It's so, so beautiful. But yeah, I love playing like all kinds of different styles. I can play by ear pretty well. So I'll just like hear something and just spend time figuring it out. You know, I think like all these things, like the OCD overlap is, I'm super present when I play guitar. I'm super present if I'm trying to figure something out. I'm very present if I'm in the ocean. Yeah. I'm very present when I'm working or working on advocacy. So that all that stuff keeps me sane, you know, yeah. Keeps me away from my brain in a way, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I get it. Well, we need to get you on American Idol 2021. And then you can tell your story and that'd be a great promotion for Made in Millions.
Nice, yeah.
Cool. So my version of the no one told me is the 20-year-old question. So I'm sure I asked you this exact question, but pick up the phone, call your 20-year-old self. What would you tell him?
I would say that you're going to experience a lot of pain, but one day you'll be able to help people with it or from it, from the experience.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. And then you've got a billboard in New York City. What do you want written on it?
No one told me intrusive thoughts are perfectly normal.
Yeah, nice. And then lastly, anything else that you wish you could have shared today?
No, I would just say what you mentioned earlier, that all the change is coming from the individuals, and anyone listening that has any passion at all, it does not have to be the arts, it doesn't have to be writing, it doesn't have to be media or entertainment. It could be being a school counselor, it could be being a parent, it could be being a friend. Like, there are so many different ways to advocate, and whatever, I think the thing you said the best is not even just your skills. It's like whatever you love doing. If you translate what you really love into helping other people, it's just such a beautiful, it's such a beautiful experience. And I would just say, anyone out there, like, madeofmillions.com is an evolving idea. It's not like a final destination. What you see is going to keep changing, and we just need perspectives. We need your ideas. So if that's, you know, submitting article content, telling your story, contributing to a campaign, introducing a psychologist to us, you know, hosting a live chat, like all that stuff is just, if we all band together and make a bunch of noise, then people are going to start listening. So every idea is welcome, and we do the best we can to respond to anyone who emails us, which is on the site. You just hit us up. I get it. Lauren gets it. You know, we're a tiny team. We've been doing all this shit with, essentially, Lauren is a one employee. Anastasia and I volunteer. Rose volunteers. Our board volunteers. You know, we do this off fucking pennies. So money's good too. If anyone has money, to send it to us.
Cool. Yeah.
But no, get involved. Get involved in some way. Could be anonymous, your anonymous story submission if you're not even there yet on your journey where you're ready to put your name on something.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, thanks for sharing. Thank you again for going over your story, where you're at, and Made in Millions. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. I mean, obviously what you do is amazing, and I've appreciated our advocacy and our friendship that we've developed over the years. And I think we'll be doing this kind of stuff for a long time. So thank you.
So there you have it. Thanks to Aaron for his time and to you guys for listening. Quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Till we speak, take care.